Welcome to another BYU Sports Nation Deep Blue Special. I'm your host, Spencer Linton. Great to have you with us in Studio B. Over the next 60 minutes, we'll showcase more powerful and impactful stories. Over the last few years, BYU TV has explored, discovered, and produced these inspiring and unique narratives, often featuring BYU athletes and coaches. These features are at the heart of our Deep Blue series. Today, we'll watch and hear stories of loss, hope, faith, and family. This episode will specifically highlight a mix of players and coaches from BYU men's basketball. Seven different men, in fact, all with their own unique backdrops, including how a young man from the Deep South named Jeff Chapman became a fan favorite in Provo. But we begin with Trevin Nell. Early in his career, Nell realized he was battling something more than just the regular nerves and pressure athletes feel. Trevin found a recipe for overcoming this adversity mixed with meaningful healing by helping others. This is Deep Blue.
My hands would shake before games. My legs were jello. I couldn't eat before practices. I couldn't eat before games. I couldn't sleep before games.
I don't know if anyone realizes how hard it is to be a BYU athlete. I didn't until I married one.
They've got way more public pressure, way more public scrutiny, a lot of people on message boards, internet saying, hey, this guy isn't performing it the way we want because they care about their team.
There's a difference between anxiety and like being nervous. Like a lot of people told me, oh, you're just nervous. Those are just good nerves.
It was that constant pressure of like, am I good enough? Will I perform? Will I be able to make my shots? Especially as a three-point shooter, you're known like, oh, you can shoot. You're gonna make your shots. So if you're not making your shots, that's a lot of pressure.
So for those that are wondering, wow, why is he just on the show and on the sidelines but not on the floor right now? What happened to you and when?
So I tore my rotator cuff tendon. It came down to it, I just needed surgery, so. I was in a really dark place and my anxiety was going through the roof. I would even question, God, like, why is this happening to me? I'd almost reevaluate. Is this worth it? Is my dream done at this point?
Can I perform at the level I was before? Am I going to be able to make it back? Or what other guys might have gotten ahead of me in the game? Or can I even just play at the level I was?
The emotion kind of took over and I just was crying pretty hard because of this life moment, this life accomplishment that I was trying to, you know, have.
At that point, you have to make a decision. How are you going to proceed? Are you gonna go hide in your room? Are you gonna go get involved in something else? Or are you gonna come suffer through every day with the team? You're force-fed the fact that you're missing, that you have to miss the whole year.
He's like, you have two options. You can either see how you can make this better and see the positive, or you can be in this dark place. And he's like, the team needs you. Like, I want you to be a part of the team. I want you to be around as much as possible.
Trevin put everybody else ahead of him.
And I found myself, instead of stepping back, to really put both feet into the team.
He took on a bunch of really important roles. One of the things that we jumped into right away was we had a new NOAA system that we were still trying to learn. Trevin was like, hey, let me be in charge of this. I think at some point we even got him a lab coat so he could really be the shot doctor.
One thing that was really good is you were good at like getting into my mechanics a little bit. Mm-hmm. We'd just be like, bro, like jump. Like, use your legs or like switch your feet or like something like that. Like just something very small, like you're very attention to detail.
You know, talking to Mike, he always says like focus on one thing.
Yeah.
So I think that translates right to shooting. And so for you is like, just jump, just a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I really try to help guys shooting wise and trying to teach them the scientific way to shoot a basketball, as well as trying to see how I could perform my shot better. So it was a unique way to help the team as well as figure out a way how I can come back better than I was.
As Trevin and I started working together, we started working on his shoulder injury, and the more we talked, the more we realized there was a lot more going on that we could help with.
It got to the point where like I was saying, I don't even like basketball. Basketball is something that's scary.
What if this goes wrong, or what if I miss these shots? We want to flip that to what if everything goes right?
The anxiety was there and the surgery was a blessing in terms of I had a whole year and a half of working with a sports psychologist to try to manage my anxiety.
Right, what if those shots go in? What if I take this risk and things go well? So we've been using that all year and that's brought a lot more joy to the basketball court.
It's been a huge blessing and it's been a huge confident booster that A, I know I'm not alone. B, I know that I can do hard things and be able to lean on other people and be vulnerable in different situations.
Trev had worked his butt off for the last, as they said, basically 588 days since the last game he played. If it wasn't physical, it was mental that he was working on. So to see him come back, he was a starting player after not playing for a whole year.
The first play of the season back, and Trev comes flying off, and he doesn't even come to a stop before the ball's left his hands, and it's a perfect shot. All of the shot doctor analytics, it barely brushes the back rim.
And once I saw that first shot go in, I like kind of like looked up and I was like, this is like happening. This is like, I was almost like a gratitude, like, thank you. Everything I went through is now paying off.
He is making more points than I've ever seen him score. And through it all, we've been there together. We have been through the journey together.
She has been there for me through thick and thin, through the good, the bad, and the ugly.
In fact, it's my grandma who told me that when you meet someone and you want their dreams, you want them to succeed more than yourself, that's true love. And honestly, that's what my shift has been. It was something of, yes, I want to succeed and I want my dreams to come true, but I want Trevin's to as well.
She was an actor. She moved out to LA for 4 years before she met me, and she wanted to pursue that dream. And she had all of her eggs in that basket. And then she met me and she decided to move back here and have her dream shift for me. The go-getter she is, she opened her own bridal store. And so it's really unique to be able to see somebody with the same drive and the same passion that I have.
It's kind of been the shift of, I want us to succeed together.
She had no doubt in her mind that I would be better than I was before. And so to be able to have that like support is amazing, and it's really helped me to grow and become the person I am today.
When life doesn't go the way we imagine, I think we learn to adapt and we learn to say, you know what? This is God's plan. How can we make it a positive thing?
For the past 500 something days, those days were just adding up and I was meeting God halfway. When you take a step back and see, okay, how can this actually benefit me? How can this be a blessing in disguise? There's so many silver linings. There's so many tender mercies you can find. There's people around you that you can trust. And if all else fails, get down and pray. And no matter what happens, it's in God's plan. And trust that.
So this is the high school I went to. It was established back in 1934. I graduated in 1984. I remember the post office being right out here, and this is where we went in. Yep, this is my gym. Looks like they have the same rims that I had. Look how old they are.
Even just a smart, you know, bright young man. You know, he always been that.
Jeff's family is amazing. He grew up in a strong Baptist home in Alabama.
The most important thing to my parents was God and Jesus. They were very religious people. We read the Bible together. We went to church together all the time. Playing in this gym, hoping for a Division I scholarship, was everything. I can remember coming here as a seventh grader and playing and seeing the varsity guys and saying, one day, I'm gonna be one of those varsity guys. And when I finally did my sophomore year become a varsity member, I remember I said, I have to play really well and do really well and become all state so I can get the attention of the big schools in the area. So this is where it's all started for me, right here in this gym.
So Jeff was playing at an all-star basketball game and it happened to be at the same time that the NCAA tournament was going on. So Coach Reed happened to be able to watch the all-star game and saw Jeff play, decided to offer him a scholarship. And so he called Jeff the next week and offered him to come play at BYU.
That building right there is where the band practiced at. The band director, who had never spoken to me in his life, he told me, so you're going to BYU, huh? And I said, yes. And he said, well, let me tell you about Mormons. And he started to lay in the Mormons. And so it was just funny to see how different things were once I got to BYU than what people were saying about it.
BYU in the 80s, so I would say it wasn't quite as hard to get into as it is now, but culturally LDS and white.
There were only 36 black people on campus in 1984 out of 26,000 students when I got there. I was down south of campus of BYU, and I saw this black kid walking down the road, and I noticed he wasn't an athlete, and the only black people I knew at BYU were athletes. So I said, I'm gonna talk to this guy. So I pulled him over and I asked him, you're not an athlete, right? He said, no. And I asked, well, what are you doing here? And he said, you know, I just got home from my mission. And I was shocked. We ended up becoming roommates and became, you know, long-lasting friends after that.
He did not want to join the church. He said he was staying his Southern Baptist religion. People would invite him over and then have the missionaries and things like that. And he always thought that was kind of funny, but.
Sometimes I did have questions, but I didn't want to ask them because I knew they would see that as interest and probably step up the pace and put, you know, talk to me more, and I didn't want that. So when Cruz and I became roommates, I decided to start asking him questions. But the cool thing he did was he would answer the question and then wouldn't say anything else about it. And I was like, okay, he's not pressuring me. I could just ask him anything. He'll give me an answer. He won't continue to try to get me baptized. It finally got to the point where I told him that I wanted to take the discussions and learn more about the gospel.
So the missionaries came, and he always laughs. He says they had him well covered because they were, first of all, sisters, which was always good. And then one was a basketball player, and then one was from Jamaica.
And they didn't know what to do with me because they said, do you want to get baptized? And I said, no, I believe it's true, but I don't have that conviction in my heart. And then we were reading in the Book of Mormon, and then someone read Ether 27 about being humble. And I remember thinking to myself, instead of me being humble and really want to know if this is true, I wanted to be proven to me that it was true. And I said a little quick prayer to myself. Heavenly Father, I'm humbling myself now. If this church is true, please let me know. And at that moment, the Spirit came down on me so strong that I started to weep, but I was happy. I'll just never forget that experience. I was, you know, content being a Southern Baptist. I'm just blown away how things have turned out. I joined the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I met you, and
like the Lord put you in the right spot and sent you to BYU.
In so many different ways, Jeff was a trailblazer at BYU. He was here when we were growing at a certain place, and now he gets to walk into a locker room that is so reflective of great people from all over the world. He is a legacy member of this BYU basketball community and how it's grown to encompass the entire world.
I think people seeing me play, they realize, if he can do well there, I can too. And I think that helped a little.
If you living right and you say you this or that, that's, you know, that's your, I don't disrespect nobody's religion. But long as, you know, I'm proud of him. I don't have to worry about you.
I think he's an amazing person. He's taught me so much. Just has been a great example, and grateful to have been on this journey with him, and know we have a lot more to go, and we'll have trials and joys, and glad that we can do it together.
I look back and all the successes that I have had, and it all started here. I just don't know if I would have been as successful as I am now if I didn't have the love and support of this community and the teachers here and my pastor. So I am just eternally grateful for what it has done for me.
Welcome back to our BYU Men's Basketball Deep Blue Special. In our next series of stories, we join BYU Hoops center Nate Austin on his journey to become a coach and learn how it largely began with what he learned in high school. Plus, how BYU Director of Strength and Conditioning Coach Michael Davey followed divine promptings to take a career risk that took him from New Zealand to the NBA and then eventually to a position with BYU basketball. We'll begin this block, however, with one of the best passing centers in the country. Ali Khalifa shares how his family inspires him every day to be the best that he can be and how Utah has become a true second home. This is Deep Blue.
Ali did not like basketball at the beginning. We started playing basketball because I was tall.
We started playing one-on-one every day, getting each other better. Obviously, I thank God that I was a little taller than everybody else, so it was kind of an escape. from the reality we were living at.
I go practice, I finish practice, then I sit with him, teach him how to like shoot. Then he started liking basketball.
Me and my sister have obviously very strong relationship right now because what we've been through when we were younger. Growing up in Alexandria, Egypt, we weren't very financially stable. I remember one time, it was me, my sister, and mom, we had practice. We were going back to get in the tram, and my mom didn't have the money for us to get on the tram. And the guy kicked us out of the tram, even though it was really cheap.
I was, you know, I was there, like, I was just looking, like, what my mom gonna do?
My mom was, like, shouting at the guy, like, we had to get off and walk all the way home. That was, like, an hour walk. And at that moment, when that happened to my mom, I was feeling angry and sad at the same time. I was mainly very angry at the guy. I was so young, I couldn't do anything.
We had each other to lean on and, like, each other to keep, like, keep it going. Like, we're not going to focus on that. Our dream was being better than anyone else, being the first that, like, people to graduate in our family. And we knew basketball would take us there, so we just focused on our dream.
Two working parents that did everything they can to be able to support him and his sister in their basketball dreams. They sacrificed a lot.
My dad, he obviously started a very low job, didn't make a ton of money, and he stuck with it, obviously, and even though it was really hard for him, he did everything for us. Like I said, I wouldn't see him for 5 days to a week. He's just working just for us. Years after you think about it, you're like, wow, like, dad was working really hard for us, and we didn't know it till now because it all paid off.
After we scouted him, I think he was 16 years old, he was given an incredible opportunity to join the NBA Academy in Australia. It was hard in the beginning. He was homesick at times. He struggled with communication, so was still learning English. His English wasn't great. If you see him today, you would never think that this is a guy, you know, 5, 6 years ago, wasn't speaking any English. Extremely, extremely smart, extremely willing to learn, and just, you know, has a hunger to get better each and every single day, both on the court and off the court.
I think he lends a perspective from his life experience, which is really unique, coming from Egypt, but obviously living in Australia for a long time, going to school at UNC Charlotte in North Carolina.
He was the player that would run on the floor and all the student section would go crazy. He won the Freshman of the Year award while he was there, and he proved to be one of the most effective and talented and skills bigs in the country.
He was ready for a bigger challenge, and he was ready to play at a different level of basketball. And as we were going through the recruiting process, there was some critical things that he was looking for.
I feel like the most challenging year of my life, mentally, I feel like it was this year. Like before I came, I feel like I was in an empty space, and I feel like I couldn't drive myself to get better and keep this positive energy and positive mindset. We never really asked for help when we were younger. It's kind of a pride thing that I would just go through it myself, but I feel like, especially mentally, you really can. You need to ask for help. And I feel like that's one of my biggest reasons why I'm here at BYU today.
Nobody knows Ellie like I do, so I know how much he grew. Seeing him, like, happy and, like, just active with everybody else. He was always, like, shy, and he was always, I'm not going to say if that bothers me type of person, but he changed a lot. He grew a lot.
Ali Khalifa is one of the most unique basketball players and unique individuals in a brilliant way that we've probably ever had here at BYU. He has got about the kindest heart of anybody you'll ever meet.
For him to go from one country to here and adapt and have a great career and then now come here, I think it's a true test to his character and his ability to adapt to any type of situation. And I think he's done a really good job of that so far with our group.
I mean, as an international student, it's already extremely difficult being so far away from home. And what he's found at BYU is he's found the closest thing that he can call home away from home. So for me and for Ali and for the family, you know that you're at your best when you feel safe and you feel home and you feel supported. And BYU and the whole BYU community has been nothing but amazing in just welcoming Ali with open arms and making him feel like he's a huge part of the community, not only the basketball team, but the entire Provo community.
I'm very, very proud of him, and I'm just excited to see what future have for him. And I know he's gonna rock it. I know he's the GOAT, so
ربنا يوفقك حبيبي، وكل يوم وإلى الأمام دايما. احنا واثقة ان ربنا سبحانه وتعالى هيحقق لك حلمك واكتر مما تتصور. يعني
خلي بالك من نفسك، خلي بالك من صحتك، لا تنسى الصلاة والدعاء.
Coach Lewis was, you know, very detailed. He expected, you know, not perfection, but he expected you to get it right. I feel like at Lone Peak, I learned kind of who I was and, you know, kind of what I could bring and gain some confidence.
The coaches gave Nathan kind of that vision. This is what's required, and this is what's being offered. And Nate was a hard worker, and he worked hard for them.
He learned to be part of a team. He learned that there was something more important than me individually.
Moving on to BYU, I got there, you know, right from my mission, and ultimately, like, I'm not sure I can play this level. I was a little nervous. And when I got there, I was like, oh, like, everything that Coach Lewis taught me in high school, like, I can just apply it here, and it was a pretty seamless transition.
He tried really hard to just give it his all. That, I think, also speaks to the fact that he holds the record for most games played at BYU.
He had graduated in communications. He was working in advertising. He was a good soldier. He was doing what was asked of him, but you could tell he did not like it.
He was working full time, and then he was being an assistant coach with Coach Bromley at Lone Peak. And when he'd come back from practice, he was happy. He was so fulfilled. That's where he just like lit up. Everything was great.
And I think that was maybe the aha moment when he was first starting out just as an assistant to the staff at Lone Peak High School. Oh, I love coaching.
But yet that wasn't paying the bills. So it was, you either need to go all in on coaching and make this your career and your job, or you've got to find some other job that's going to help you be fulfilled in life, because that part of his life was making him miserable.
One of the pieces of advice I gave to Nathan, I said, I watched, and I'm biased because I'm his dad, but I said, you're good at this. And I told him, bet on Nate. Bet on Nate.
It was kind of this, what do I need to be doing? Where should I go? And so I encouraged him to talk to Coach Rose and look into being a graduate assistant coach. So he had about, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks to apply, to take the GRE and get everything ready so that he could be prepared for that season.
I don't think he was very excited to go back to school. I think that was necessary as part of the process. He doesn't mind school, didn't mind education, but he really wanted to, what he really was doing this for, because he wanted to be a coach.
I was a graduate assistant for Coach Rose's last year and then Coach Pope's first year. And so from a selfish standpoint, it was an unbelievable opportunity to see how two big time, just great coaches did things. And they've done things totally different, and both of them are extremely successful. And so it also showed me that, hey, there's not maybe one cut and dry way to be successful.
As he concluded his time at BYU, good experience. He really was debating about whether to try and find a job at the college level or go to high school.
Nate loved his high school experience. He loved coaching at that level, and we thought it was the perfect time to maybe go down, get some head coaching experience. We were living at my parents' house at the time. We found an opening up in Grantsville. I had no idea where it was. And so he applied, he went out there, they offered him the job during the interview. That's the direction everything ended up going.
He was anxious to just form that program like he'd been taught by his coaches at Lone Peak, his coaches at BYU. So he's had lots of great examples to draw from and learn from, but also then to just not try to be Quincy Lewis or Mark Pope, or not try to be Dave Rose, just to be Nate, to take the things that he's learned from them, but then to be authentically you.
Nate took that opportunity at the high school level to really set and instill values in these high schoolers. He really wanted to help build them up as young men.
I mean, ultimately, I feel like it's my responsibility. God has given me unbelievable people in my life to help shape me and help me grow into who I've become. And ultimately, I think it's my responsibility to go be the person for somebody else. This game and this career is about making sure people feel loved and giving people a home and giving people, you know, helping them find, you know, friendships and relationships, and then ultimately about becoming a better husband, a better father, a better son, a better employee. And if the game has taught them that through working with me and through coming through our program, then I've been successful.
He ran his program in a way to make sure that it wasn't just about basketball, because to Nate, it isn't just about basketball.
It was fun to watch that team kind of take on his personality. They played hard. He coached at Grantsville for 3 years, good success, 2 region championships. They took 3rd in state twice and 2nd once. Summer after his third season at Grantsville, he did have a significant choice. I think he was feeling like if he ever wanted to go to the college level, he needed to do it sooner rather than later.
We told Grantsville, hey, we're stepping down, we're going the college route, and we went all in on pursuing college.
As soon as we found out that was a possibility, I was overjoyed. This is where he belongs, and he is crushing it for us right now. He's doing an incredible job, and he's got a great future as a coach.
I think in a role like director of basketball operations, it does demonstrate his character.
He's fine with being not in the spotlight and doing his job and doing it super well. And I think that's just part of the love that he has, you know? Like, he doesn't need the attention or the gratitude. He's just out here doing his job because he cares about what's going on here at BYU, and he wants to put forth his best work every day.
I see it as, hey, we will be ultimately the most successful if we're doing this together.
She's been with me every step of the way. She's been so just, I think, supportive and encouraging to find what I'm passionate about. And she said, hey, if we make less money because you love coaching, then she's like, I'd rather live with a happy Nate than a Nate that makes, you know, a lot more money.
It's been great because he's just as supportive of me as I feel like I've been able to be for him. And that's ultimately what makes this work. College coaching is a lot of work. It's a lot of time, but we found ways to make it fun for our family.
I wouldn't be where I am today, you know, in my career as a coach, as a father, as a husband, without her, because she has shown me what real love looks like, what real encouragement looks like, what real support looks like, what real sacrifice looks like. She is just a great inspiration and a great support and encouragement to me.
I feel in my heart that this is about a lot more than just a sport. It's something that means a lot to our family.
Born in New Zealand, and my family immigrated when I was about 12 to Australia, and didn't do too well at high school, too busy playing basketball and chasing girls around. So going into junior college, got my degree there, and that's where I met my wife.
He just had that presence of the Spirit with him because he was just sincere in whenever he talked about anything, and he didn't use any profanity at all. And so I kind of felt that drew you to him.
We got married pretty early, started to have children. And during that period, I was really struggling to find work. You know, I was working in factories and labor jobs, and my dad had a car cleaning business. So I was working for him. And I really got to a point where I was wondering, is this what I'm gonna do for the rest of my life? And I knew that's not what I wanted. I wanted to achieve more and accomplish more. And I remember going to general conference with this in the back of my mind, like, what am I gonna do with my life? You know, how am I going to support my family?
Brethren, you look like a shirt sleeve priesthood. You look all dressed in white, ready to go to work. And the time has come to go to work. And so I say to you, young men, rise up and discipline yourself to take advantage of educational opportunities.
When he started to talk about that, that really hit me, hit my spirit. And I knew at that moment that I needed to go back to school and to get as much education as I could. And that's where my real passion for basketball started to come out of me, and wanted to pursue sports and the sport that I love to support my family. And so that was on the weekend, and then on the Monday I went straight to the colleges and started to apply, and that was the start of my career journey.
So it was at the time when he had just finished schooling, and at the time he had worked as a youth worker with foster kids.
Now, after about a year and a half of that, the youth work company wanted to offer me a full-time job as a manager and give me a car and significantly better wage. And at the same time, I got offered an internship at one of the elite sporting academies in Australia.
At the time, obviously, it was a dream. Or providing, you know. And so he had come to me and we had talked about it, we had prayed about it, and yeah, it just felt right for him to go to the path and direction of the coaching, even though it was low paying, because in the end it was him doing the job that he was passionate about.
Once I got into the internship, I very quickly started to work my way through and got more and more responsibility, the full-time job. Now, ultimately led to taking the Australian swim team to London Olympics and two world championships. So it's a real privilege to represent my country and to be a part of that whole process. So you follow one prompting and it changed the whole course of my life. I would have been mid-30s, got a call from the state president to come in with my wife. He called me as bishop of a newly created ward, and my parents happened to be in the ward boundaries.
And then halfway through his bishopric time, his dad was diagnosed with cancer.
My dad was not an active member of the church. During that period, he really started to think about life. What's after this earth life? And my dad happened to be getting chemotherapy treatment at the hospital close to the Brisbane Temple. And I just felt prompted, the spiritual prompting to stop and just say hello. And so we did. We pulled in, we walked in. And my dad's not a very emotional man, but when we walked in, he just burst into tears.
Didn't really think much of it, and it wasn't until the next day that Mum rang up Mike and just said, "You'd never guess what Dad told me. Dad had said that he wants to take me to the temple." And he said, really? He goes, "Yeah, it was because when you guys came last night, he said it was like he saw angels coming towards him. And he really felt the spirit at that time, and that was like the point where he really felt like, I need to take my family to the temple and I have to do it now." It was just a joyful occasion for all the family members.
So kind of during that period too, I ended up getting a job with British Basketball.
You know, Michael interviewed him for his temple recommend. So I think that was something special for Michael and even for his dad.
And that ended up being the last interview I did as a bishop. And I remember when he left and I was in my office contemplating what just happened, I had a huge sense that my purpose for being a bishop and being in the ward was to seal my own family, not just help the members of the ward.
So the call that he got to the Bucks was when he was in England.
They said, "Hey, we've heard about you. We want you to come work for us."
They actually said, you know, Wisconsin. And at the beginning, we're like, "Where's Wisconsin?" So we had to kind of like look it up.
They're like, "We want you right now." So I had to go back to Australia. And I had about 2 weeks to pack up, basically, and then get to the US.
That was his dream from the very beginning. And to kind of feel like you've been given this opportunity, it was like opened up, you know, he was just so happy.
So you could see the hand of the Lord in my life, like just putting things in place and people in my life to help me have the courage to pursue my dreams.
He's probably the foremost expert in his profession in the world. I mean, he spent the last 7 years as a strength conditioning rehab coach for the Milwaukee Bucks, won an NBA championship with them. And he's coached on 3 different continents and he's done it at the highest level.
The NBA is awesome, but it's so intense.
The NBA and college basketball are 2 completely different worlds. And for Wiz to want to go through the interview process here at BYU was pretty startling.
In the end, it just worked the way it's supposed to happen. Certainly, it happened in ways that were beyond my control.
But we are super grateful for the gift that he is giving us and the NBA mentality that he is bringing to BYU basketball.
You know, one of the things that Coach Pope highlighted was, you know, the Sundays were off. He had, like, evenings. He could come home for dinner and stuff like that. Like, those were things that probably a lot of people just have in their lives, where for us, it was not present all the time.
So someone in strength and conditioning, I get to spend more times with the players than the coaches do. So you're in the trenches with them, you're getting to know them at a very deep level.
In the NBA, you get to coach guys and you get to be there for guys as they go through complicated situations. But in college, you get to actually change the trajectory of young men's lives.
And so that really excited me about the job, to be able to merge both my spiritual life and my career together and be able to help impact young people. That was a big driver.
Wiz is built to do that. Like, he cares about it. He has these guys over to his house all the time. Like, he's invested in their lives. He takes the time to sit and talk with them about things that have nothing to do with basketball or athletics.
I feel like I'm doing the things the Lord wants me to do. Whatever you're passionate about, you can pursue. If you put the work in and you're persistent and you follow the Lord, the counsel on all things, and follow the promptings of the Spirit, that, you know, good things will happen.
Nate Austin, Michael Davey, and Ali Khalifa all flourished in their first seasons at BYU and in their respective roles, helping BYU men's hoops to a record-setting run through Big 12 play. Up next, the rise of Jackson Robinson, overcoming tragic loss to become the Big 12 sixth man of the year. More Deep Blue is on the way. Welcome back. I'm Spencer Linton, and this is our BYU men's basketball Deep Blue special. Our final 2 stories of the day come from Mike Hall and Jackson Robinson. Jackson shares why he chose BYU after stops at Texas A&M and Arkansas. But first, Mike Hall went from being a BYU basketball star to becoming a father, then to becoming a mentor. And during that journey, had to overcome a tragic loss that now allows him to bring love to others. This is Deep Blue.
I had a great dunk and ended up being ESPN Player of the Week.
He still lives off of that moment. It was exciting.
But what people don't know about that game is that I had 3 points. I had that dunk and a free throw. That's all I had. I just had 3 points. I fouled out that game, and I actually airballed a free throw. It was like 3 feet short, but it was a game that I remember.
He had kind of a rough road to BYU.
Right out of high school, my girlfriend and I, we ended up having a child, and that's right before I started my freshman year at Pepperdine.
He went to school because he had to, in order to be able to play basketball with the hopes of a college scholarship.
Ended up getting kicked out of Pepperdine because I just wasn't taking care of my business. The maturity, I wasn't there.
He will tell you he was not the best student. He didn't take his schooling very seriously. I think he always kind of knew basketball is going to be my thing. And so school, whatever.
Coach at Pepperdine, he helped me come to get to Utah. He sent me to Dixie and said, hey, Mike, okay, go here. Get away from home, get away from LA, get away from that scene. You can go concentrate, play basketball, get your grades back together.
Coach Rose has ties with Dixie, and he ended up here at BYU.
I don't think Mike Hall ever grew up thinking, man, someday I'm gonna go to BYU and be a BYU Cougar. In fact, I'll bet you he didn't even know anything about BYU until somebody said, hey, would you like to come play basketball at Brigham Young University? And I love that about him because he brings just a different perspective. He came to Brigham Young University to be a basketball player. I think he left Brigham Young University prepared to be an excellent husband, father, and contributor to the community.
I had grown up a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, knew that I wanted to be married in the temple, and my high school boyfriend was not a member of the church, and that was one of the reasons why we broke up. Then, of course, I meet Mike, who's not a member of the church, and I'm like, oh, but he's so fun.
I told her friend, I was like, I think I got a crush on her.
I think it got obviously to the point where we both cared a lot for each other, and we realized maybe this is gonna go somewhere.
You know, life happens, and I end up getting baptized after I left BYU, and you know, she stuck around. And then a year later, we got married in the temple. So it's a long process, and then, you know, life happened, start our family, and here we are 16 years later.
When we got married, I knew that I wanted 4 kids. I'm kind of a control freak. We started our family right away, and then all of a sudden, our youngest is getting ready to go into first grade. And in July, I kind of felt like maybe I was pregnant.
JoJo, our baby girl, she was born in March 2021.
Within 3 seconds of her getting here, she wasn't breathing.
She had breathing tube, feeding tube, everything you had, you know.
For some, it would be too much to handle, but for Tara and Mike, who, you know, are so willing to just get to work and find a way to get things done, they really embraced it.
We didn't know that she had anything. No ultrasounds gave us any hints that anything was gonna be wrong with this baby.
She had a rare genetic disease called cat eye syndrome, which kind of affected a lot of things in her body. Some of the stuff I still don't really understand.
How I wonder what you are.
Joe was in and out of the hospital for her whole life. She was being suctioned because she couldn't swallow. She was on oxygen off and on quite a bit.
One night, she just kind of turned pale blue. And that was the last night she,
Mike came, met me at the emergency room. And I think by the time he got there, they were doing CPR on our baby. And that was crazy to see doctors doing chest compressions on your little infant in the ER room, and we just hugged each other and watched and listened to them. because she was so in and out of the hospital, we never got to give her a name or a blessing. And so we called our bishop and asked him if Mike could give her a blessing and give her her name. And so we did that together. And we just rocked her. And we're able to say goodbye to her just real peacefully. It was beautiful.
Joe taught us how to love outside ourselves and not think about ourselves.
It was inspiring to see how it united the family, how they came together and worked through it together and relied on their testimonies of families being together forever to really get them through it.
Around her birthday, because birthdays, those kind of days can be hard, but in March, we try and look around even our everyday situations. What can we do to maybe bring a little joy to their life? Because Jordan brought us joy. So our joy for JoJo is what we look forward to in March, to looking around ourselves, to looking outside of ourselves and giving back.
As soon as the Big 12 announcement happened, you know, Kalani felt a strong sense of need to evaluate all areas.
We opened that spot to have somebody be a true mentor that where it doesn't involve playing time. The players need a place to go that's not just about the field.
There was a lot of things that Mike brought to the table in terms of just his life experience.
His ups and his downs, both with basketball and trying to make sports his career, with family, with even different career changes and different roles. I think he's in a great role to be a mentor.
I try to be myself. I think working with athletes, and especially college athletes, these athletes, they get a lot of people to tell them yes all the time, right? That's not my job. My job when I was at basketball and my job now is to tell these guys what they need to hear.
I think he puts all that together and gives these guys a game plan and a vision of what they can accomplish and gives them things to think about that they never thought was possible.
When I ask our guys how they're doing, I mean it. Like, how are you doing? How can I help? That's one thing that I've learned through Joe's. It's like, how are you guys doing, man? Because our hearts are different. And I want to help you with that if I can.
This is going to sound crazy, but when Jackson was two, I bought him a little tight basketball goal and I put it together. Had a little orange ball that came with it, and he picked it up and shot it with perfect form the first time. I mean, like, absolutely perfect form. So I gave it back to him, and he shot it again. And I picked up the phone and called my dad and said, you have to come over here and see this. And since then, he's just always loved basketball.
It's a big basketball family. I come from a lot of hoopers.
He played on his first team when he was four, and the coach after the season was like, you guys need to put him on a real team. He knows what he's doing. He could dribble, he could shoot a layup. So from a very early age, he loved it, and he obviously had some natural talent for it.
My grandma, she was a Hall of Famer. My aunt, she went to Southeastern. She was also a Hall of Famer. My mom went there after transferring from Missouri State. She became a Hall of Famer also.
I think it was great for him as a basketball player. He had lots of people he could look to for advice, and even though he might not see it as help, we often give him critical feedback that he might not love to hear. But we give it to him anyway because we know it's best for him.
And so it's been really neat to see, right, that confidence that Jax has in his game and how that has grown, right, over the years and where we're able to see him, but also that he understands the game at a really high level because he's been taught really, really well from a couple of strong women in his life.
Just the motivation of my family and friends and everything, it just kept me going. And now I'm here today.
Freshman year was tough. He graduated high school a year early, so he went to Texas A&M as a 17-year-old.
COVID had just hit. We couldn't get on campus, so I didn't have a summer with my fellow teammates and my coaches.
It's tough to leave your kid somewhere and hope they do all right. But I mean, I knew he'd be all right, but, you know, I don't like him struggling, things like that. So it was tough down there at Texas to see him in that situation.
You know, it was just difficult kind of adjusting to college from high school so fast. It was a fast transition. During the season, some of us kept getting COVID, things like that. And it was just rough. We finished last in the SEC, so
think that team just really struggled to find themselves and to create any kind of bonds just based on the fact that they were spending no time together other than when they were practicing. I think the stress was hard for the players, the stress was hard on the coaching staff, and ultimately it just led to Jackson just not finding a great fit.
Just kind of going through that struggle, though, I think it kind of made me who I am. Just going through those ups and downs, it taught me a lot of lessons.
And then after his first year transfer to Arkansas, really good program, didn't really have the opportunity that he was seeking. And then year three.
We went to dinner with Coach Pope, most of the coaching staff, and Trevin and Trey. And Trevin told the coaches, you guys leave. They want to just let them ask us questions without you here listening so we can be totally honest and they don't feel like they can't ask. And so the coaches left for like 45 minutes and left us with those two. And we had a very open and honest dialogue with them, and they told us all about what the team's goals are, kind of how they interact with one another, how the coaches are. And they said they're exactly who they are all the time. This is exactly how they are. And that was just a really good feeling because Jackson was looking for a place to go where he felt valued as a player and also as a person, and what place he could build relationships with the coaches that had been something he'd been lacking.
I think he's found a home here where we certainly love having him here, and I think he fits in here perfectly.
We take a lot of pride in helping, right, Jackson and all of our guys, right, grow in every aspect of their life. We believe that he can grow as a basketball player in a lot of ways. We also believe that he can grow off the court through his academic experience, through his NIL experience, and through every other experience that he has here in the state of Utah at BYU, so that he can go forth and serve and be the best human being he can be when he finishes time here at BYU.
Jackson's someone who is very unselfish. He has such a kind heart. And he's also very determined. So when you have someone who has such a big focus on giving back to people and doing the right thing in situations, and then you see someone who's so focused, it's someone who wants to make a difference. So he sees something that could be unjust or someone struggling in a situation, and he really does everything he can to try to make that situation better for them. And I think it's been really neat to watch him from a very early age think about things that I don't think most kids think about, and then try to do what he can to help in those situations.
I feel like a lot of people have sacrificed for me to be where I'm at. So the support that I got, I can give it back to whoever. I just want to be able to return the favor at some point.
What a show. So many incredible stories shared today. As we wrap, a reminder to watch more inspirational stories like the ones you just watched and heard by visiting byutv.org/deepblue, or you can simply scan this barcode on the screen. Another thanks to the several members of the BYU basketball team for sharing their stories, and thank you for joining us on another Deep Blue Venture. For every member of our outstanding crew here at BYU TV, I'm Spencer Linton. We'll see you next time.